So I'm going to talk about a project called Mesos that we've built at UC Berkeley. It's a joint project with Ben Heineman, Andy Konwinski, Ali Godsey, Anthony Andy, Scott, and Jan. And with Mesos, we're fortunate enough to have actually started getting some real users for the project as well. Twitter is actually using Mesos to run about a dozen production services, and researchers at Berkeley and UCSF are using Mesos to run large-scale computations, and so are engineers at Conviva. So I'm going to start with some background about the problem that we're looking at. So as everyone knows, there's been a lot of interest lately in large-scale computation on commodity clusters because these clusters have become necessary to process the data in a lot of application domains. And as a result of this, there has been a lot of innovation in systems for making these clusters easier to program. So new programming models and implementations of those programming models. And we're just going to call these systems frameworks for the purpose of this talk. So just as examples, you know, there's MapReduce and Dryad. These were some of the earliest ones. But there's a wide variety of other frameworks out there. For example, in the past 2 years, Google has talked about several other frameworks that are very different from MapReduce, including Pragel, which is a specialized model for graph processing, and Percolator, which is an incremental web indexing system. And I've also put up two other ones that might seem a little out of place. First of all, there's MPI. So MPI sounds like something you know you would use in a supercomputer, but actually users at Yahoo are also using MPI to process some of the data they have, just because it's a better programming model for the applications they want to do. And I also put up Ruby on Rails because web applications and interactive services are a big portion of the data center workload. So what's the problem that we're trying to address? The problem is that no single one of these frameworks will be optimal for all data center applications. So as a result of this, organizations really want to be able to run multiple frameworks in the same cluster. And running multiple frameworks in the same cluster is important for two reasons. First of all, it maximizes utilization, and you know data centers are expensive, so you want to get high utilization out of them. And the second important reason for data-intensive processing is that when you have big data sets, they're very costly to replicate. So you don't want to have to, you know, a petabyte data set for MapReduce and then copy it for Pragel to a separate cluster. You would much rather have these things coexist in the same cluster and with access to the same storage nodes. So just to give you a sense of what we want to do here, so today, unfortunately, all these frameworks are developed independently. And every framework assumes that it owns a set of nodes. So as a result, the only real way to share a cluster between frameworks is to statically partition it, either among physical machines or virtual machines. But basically, you cut out a slice for each framework and let it run in there. And of course, the downside of this is that you get poor statistical multiplexing, and the frameworks might have peaks in demand at different times, and you have a lot of resources idle and underutilization. So with Mesos, we'd like to move to a world where all these frameworks can share a common resource pool dynamically, and you can get good statistical multiplexing. And there are two benefits to doing this. The first one is that maybe jobs will finish faster because they'll be able to scale up beyond the size you would have given to that one framework by itself. And the second reason is that you might be able to run the same workload with fewer nodes, or you might be able to run more workload on the same set of nodes you already have. So this is why we want to do statistical multiplexing. So to do this, we're going to move away from this world of independent frameworks and add a common resource sharing layer that all the frameworks talk to, which is Mesos. And of course, in this talk, I'm going to talk about how to design such a layer, you know, to work well, to scale well, and so forth. That's the main challenge we're looking at in this talk. So before I go into that, I also wanted to talk about two other benefits of adding this kind of layer in place. The first benefit, which is maybe a little surprising, is that there's also a lot of value in using Mesos even if you only use a single framework, such as, say, Hadoop. And the reason is you can use Mesos to run multiple instances of Hadoop, And you can use this to isolate workloads. For example, to have separate clusters for production and experimental jobs so that they can't cause each other to crash. And you can also use it to run multiple versions of the framework and either deploy upgrades or just test out several versions at the same time. That's one of the benefits. The other benefit is that once you have this common resource sharing layer in place, it becomes much easier to build and deploy specialized frameworks for the applications that the general abstractions like MapReduce don't perform well for. You can just have these coexist with your existing MapReduce workload. You don't have to go and upgrade everything at once. In Mesos, we've built one such framework for iterative applications that can actually outperform Hadoop by a factor of 20 without writing a lot of lines of code to do this. So that's a quick overview. Let me go into an outline of the talk. I'm going to start with the goals and architecture for Mesos. Once I do that, I'll talk a little bit about the implementation, and I'll show some evaluation results. And after that, I'll conclude with some related work, because there's, of course, a lot of related work in this space. So let's start with the goals. So we had four primary goals in mind with Mesos. First and foremost was to get high utilization. This is why we want to share the cluster to begin with. Now, the second goal after that was to support a diverse array of frameworks, including current frameworks and future frameworks, because these are constantly being developed. And this is actually important to get good utilization as well, because if we design a scheduler that works for today's frameworks but not for some future ones, you may have to go back to static partitioning for those or go back to the drawing board. So we really wanted to be able to support a diverse array of frameworks. And after that, of course, we have the scalability and reliability to work in a data center environment. So we've accomplished these goals by adopting a design that looks a little bit like a microkernel. It's a design where the Mesos core is very small and simple, and it pushes the scheduling decisions to the frameworks themselves. And this design allows us to support a diverse array of frameworks that do their own scheduling, and also makes it easier to make Mesos scalable and robust. So we've been able to scale the Mesos master to manage 50,000 slaves. And in terms of fault recovery, all the state in the master is actually soft state. So we can very quickly recover it without needing any kind of replicated state machine or anything like that for the Mesos state. So in more detail, there are two primary elements to our design. First of all, we have a fine-grained resource sharing model. What we mean by fine-grained sharing is that in contrast to static partitioning, we let the jobs, the frameworks, divide their computations into small units called tasks, and we schedule at the level of tasks. So this helps us achieve higher utilization, better latency for starting a new job, and also better data locality, as I'll talk about. And we can do this for a lot of data center workloads because frameworks like MapReduce and Dryad already divide work into small tasks for load balancing and fault tolerance reasons. So now we just let them run these tasks on top of Mesos. The second element is this application control scheduling model called resource offers that lets us be scalable and lets the frameworks do their own scheduling. Now let me talk about each of those in turn. So fine-grained sharing, I'm going to contrast it with coarser-grained sharing that you can do with static partitioning. And the coarse-grained sharing is also the most common one in HPC schedulers for supercomputers. And it actually makes a lot of sense there because their jobs are coarse-grained. They don't scale up and down elastically. You just run on N nodes for some amount of time. So with fine-grained sharing, we have these little tasks, and we can share nodes both in space and in time across frameworks. One advantage we already talked about is utilization, because if you don't use your partition with coarse-grained sharing, you still have those nodes, and here we can launch someone else's tasks on them. The other benefit that's important in a data center is data locality. So let me talk a little about that. So in these data centers, we have a shared storage system, usually like the GFS or HDFS, and the storage system spans all the nodes. And if you do coarse-grained partitioning, then each framework will only be on a small fraction of the nodes, and it'll have to read data across the network. With fine-grained sharing, on the other hand, frameworks can take turns running tasks on each node. So here, a task from framework 3 finished, and we launch one from framework 1. And then here, a task from framework 2 finishes, and we launch one from framework 3. So in just in summary, these are the benefits of fine-grained sharing. Okay. That was the easy one. Let's talk about resource offers, too. So when we started Mesos, one thing we considered doing is building a single centralized scheduler that will do all the scheduling. And here, this is, again, an approach in a lot of existing schedulers. The applications express their needs in some kind of resource request language, and then the scheduler matches them to resources. One attractive thing about this model is that you can, you know, potentially make optimal scheduling decisions because you have all the information if they can express it for you. But there are several disadvantages that caused us to turn away from this. One is just the complexity of designing a resource request language that captures the needs of all the frameworks, and then designing a scheduler that can make sense of it and do something smart with those needs. Even if we could do something like that, it would be harder to make this kind of system scalable and robust to make sure that it doesn't lose state on failure, for example. And lastly, the other big reason for us was that the future frameworks that are continuously coming out might have needs that we haven't anticipated, and then we risk having to go back to the drawing board. So in Mesos, we actually flip things around instead and use a model called resource offers. In resource offers, Mesos tells the frameworks about available resources in the cluster rather than the frameworks telling Mesos about their needs. And then each framework picks out of those resources which ones it wants to use and which of its tasks it wants to launch on them. So the benefit of this is that Mesos itself is simple, and it's easy to add new frameworks onto it and have them do their own scheduling. Of course, one disadvantage is that the decisions may not be optimal, but we show that they're actually pretty good. And for example, for data locality, we have nearly 100% data locality using resource offers. So resource offers might seem like a strange way of doing things initially, but we actually do this kind of resource allocation fairly often in real life. And one example is when your airline asks you to pick a seat on an airplane. They don't ask you, you know, to specify some constraints or some utility function as to how you want to be placed. They just tell you, hey, here are the seats, and you pick one according to your own preferences. Okay, so I'm going to just go into a bit more detail and show you the Mesos architecture. In Mesos, we have a master and a number of slave nodes, we also have these frameworks that talk to the master. So each framework has two components. There's a scheduler at the top, which accepts or rejects resource offers and launches tasks. And then there's an executor. This is a binary that just runs the tasks for your specific framework. So in this example, we have MPI and Hadoop, and Hadoop has no tasks running. MPI has two of them, but maybe we just submitted a new Hadoop job, and I'm going to show how the resource offer process works. So the first thing that happens is that Mesos knows that there are available resources on some of these nodes. And it consults a pluggable module called the allocation module that implements the inter-framework scheduling policy. So here you can do something like priority, you can do fair sharing. The one we've spent the most time on is a generalization of fair sharing for multiple resources that Ali Godsey is going to give a talk about in this session later on. So the allocation module just tells you which framework to offer the resources to. Once it's decided, you put together a resource offer, and the resource offer is just a list of nodes and a vector of available resources on each node. And then you send this to the framework. In this case, let's say it was Hadoop. And the framework scheduler then can do its own framework-specific scheduling. So for example, in Hadoop, Hadoop might care about data locality, and it might see I have data on slave 2 but not on slave 1. So I'm only going to launch a task on slave 2. And the framework can return 0 or more tasks. And here we're going to send back one task. And then on slave 2, the Mesos slave, its job is to launch and isolate the executors from each other. So it's going to launch a Hadoop executor. And for the isolation, we just use OS mechanisms, such as Linux containers. So the last thing that happens here is we saw Hadoop rejected some of these resources. So now we can go and offer them to a different framework as well. So there's a couple of things to note here. So one thing is that we've separated the inter-framework scheduling, which is done by the allocation module, from the intra-framework scheduling, which is done by each framework independently. The other question you might have is, you know, how does the framework decide when to accept and when to reject resources? And for this one, we found that a simple policy where you just wait a short amount of time for resources that you like actually works pretty well, at least for things like data locality. So I'm going to show some results for that later. Okay, there's one other piece with resource offers. So just doing plain resource offers might lead to resources being rejected a lot of times before someone likes them. So there's an optimization we do called filters. And with filters, you can specify a Boolean predicate to the Mesos master that tells it, I'm never going to accept resources, say, with fewer than 8 gigabytes of memory. So don't even offer them to me. And the Mesos master treats this exactly the same way as if you rejected those resources. So this allows us to short-circuit the rejection process. You can imagine adding other kinds of hints here as well, but the key aspect of our model is that because you have the ability to accept or reject, ultimately, you can ensure correctness in which resources you get. And then all these other things, the filters, are just an optimization to reduce the number of offers that have to happen. And we've gotten pretty far using just offers without having to do any kinds of filters or hints. Okay, so that was a tour of the architecture. Let me talk a little bit about the implementation. We've implemented Mesos in about 20,000 lines of C++, we use Apache Zookeeper to have a leader election among multiple masters and to have a failover. And we've ported a bunch of frameworks to work on top of it, especially Hadoop, MPI, and Torque. Torque is a scheduler for HPC, actually, where you can queue up MPI jobs and have them execute. To show, you know, I talked about specialized frameworks providing benefits over general abstraction. So we've built a specialized framework as well called Spark that's optimized for iterative applications. It can outperform Hadoop by a factor of 20, primarily because it can keep data in memory between iterations and be able to reuse it very quickly that way. And we've also open sourced the project. Actually, in December, the project entered the Apache incubator. That was a quick tour of the implementation. We're also fortunate enough to have some people using this. So Ben Heinemann is working with Twitter to run Mesos there, and it's running on more than 100 nodes now and running about a dozen production services. We have machine learning groups at Berkeley using Spark. Conviva is also using Spark for data analytics. And we're also working with some researchers at UCSF to run Hadoop and eventually Spark as well. On top of their clusters. Okay, so now let me talk a bit about our results. So remember, we had these four goals. We had utilization, diverse frameworks, scalability, and reliability. I'm going to show some results for each of them. So for utilization, I'm going to compare how we do compared to static partitioning, both in terms of utilization and job performance. Do jobs do better in a shared cluster? For placement goals, I'm going to look at achieving data locality on Mesos, and I'll also talk about scalability and robustness. So let me start with this. This is just a picture of the system in action sharing resources among four frameworks. So this is actually a macro benchmark we ran where we took these workloads, and I'm not going to go into too much detail about the workloads. The details are in the paper, but we basically had Spark running an iterative job. We had two instances of Hadoop. The red one was running only large batch jobs, one after the other, and the blue one was running a mix of small and large jobs based on the Facebook workload. And finally, we had some MPI jobs running on top of Torque. So there's a few things to notice about this graph. So first of all, the frameworks have varying demands across time. And when the demand of some frameworks is low, other ones can scale up to fill in the empty resources. So in this case, for example, the large Hadoop mix has scaled up to more than 3/4 of the cluster because no one else except Torque is earning jobs. And so it gets to finish jobs faster as a result of that. Of course, in other times when they all have demand, they each get about 1/4 of the resources, and we were using fair sharing here, so it makes sense. The little spikes at the top are because Spark actually scales up and down between each iteration, and we fill in the gaps with Hadoop tests for that one. And the last thing to notice actually is how quickly we can transition between these allocations. So it takes under 10 seconds to scale a framework up from 0% to 25% of the cluster, for example. Okay, so this shows we're sharing resources dynamically. We have a colorful graph. Does it actually help the frameworks? So we also compared this workload against a statically partitioned cluster where we just gave each framework 25% of the nodes. And here are the speedups that the frameworks get running on top of Mesos. So all the frameworks that have fine-grained tasks here that are Hadoop and Spark do better on Mesos. And the one that does best is the large Hadoop mix, where on average jobs finish 2 times faster. And this is because it actually has the most demand, and it fills in a lot of the gaps in demand of the other frameworks. The Spark and Facebook Hadoop mix have less demand, and so they benefit less from scaling up, but they do benefit from it. And Torque and MPI does about similarly on the shared cluster as it does by itself. Okay, so now we've talked about utilization. Now, can frameworks also meet their placement requirements? That's the next question. To do this, we ran a test of trying to achieve data locality using resource efforts. So Mesos doesn't know about framework placement needs such as data locality. In this test, we ran 16 instances of Hadoop MapReduce on a shared HDFS cluster on 100 nodes. We wanted to see, can they actually still achieve good locality? And as the policy for when to accept or reject resources in Hadoop, we used a simple one called delay scheduling, where you just wait a few seconds to get a local offer. And if you don't get one, you fall back and you accept non-local ones. So what we see here is, if we look at the first graph, data locality, with static partitioning, we get terrible data locality because everyone is only on 1/16 of the nodes. With Mesos, on the other hand, we get about 97% data locality. So this is pretty close to optimal because you can't get more than 100%. And this improvement in locality also improves jobs completion times. So here they improve by a factor of 1.7. Okay. Next, I'm going to talk about this performance of the system itself, so scalability. So one reason Mesos can scale pretty high is because it only performs this inter-framework scheduling, things like fair sharing or priority, where each scheduling decision is pretty easy to make. It's easier than having to look at task dependencies and data locality and things like that within each framework. So as a result, we've scaled Mesos to handle 50,000 slaves. These were emulated slaves. We don't have 50,000 machines, but we ran 200 machines on Amazon EC2 and a number of slaves on each one, and we had them all connect to one Mesos master. So the traffic hitting that master was the same as if you had these 50,000 nodes, and it was basically handling 50,000 TCP connections and managing these slaves. And on top of this, we ran 200 frameworks. There were 100,000 tasks, 2 tasks per node, and the average task duration was 30 seconds. And the graph here shows what we measure here is the overhead of starting running a new framework, basically, once this cluster is in steady state and all the resources are filled. So once everything was running, we would launch a new framework that ran a 10-second task, and we measured how much longer it took than 10 seconds. So this is the time to register with Mesos, get a resource offer, get a reply back, and so on. And it's always less than a second, which is what we wanted to do. finally, let me talk about fault tolerance very quickly. The reason we can recover quickly from failures is because we only have soft state. We only need to make these inter-framework decisions, so we just need the list of current frameworks and how many tasks they each have on the nodes in the cluster. And we can recover this when the frameworks and slaves connect to a new master. And in our experiments, this takes about 10 seconds, mostly due to timeouts in ZooKeeper for deciding that the old master is dead. Okay. That's the evaluation. Let me finish by talking about related work. There is, of course, a lot of prior work on sharing clusters, but a lot of these environments are different from the modern data center environment. So in HPC, I already talked how they do coarse-grain sharing because they have these inelastic jobs. Virtual machine clouds also do coarse-grain sharing for long-lived VMs, and they give you few controllers over placement. Condor is a very successful project with a centralized scheduler with a very flexible matchmaking engine, but we found that some cloud policies, such as delay scheduling, couldn't be expressed very easily using Condor. And the closest system to our own is a next-generation Hadoop design developed in parallel by Yahoo, where they changed Hadoop to have two-level scheduling, and they also want to support non-MapReduce applications. So this system does fine-grained sharing, but it uses a central scheduler with a request language with locality preferences instead of resource offers. So that's it. So in conclusion, in Mesos, we share clusters efficiently among these frameworks thanks to two design elements, fine-grained sharing and resource offers. And we allow current frameworks to coexist. We also allow the development of specialized ones like Spark. And we've open-sourced the system, and we're starting to get some experience using it as well. Thanks for listening.
George Porter, UC San Diego. Great talk. So in the resource offers you talked about, you mentioned like CPU and memory.
Mm-hmm.
But at the beginning of the talk, you said you also supported Ruby on Rails, or were interested in doing that.
Yeah.
So how do you handle network bandwidth between competing applications?
Yeah. That's a good question. And actually, the person who's going to talk about that is right here. So we didn't build a new network isolation mechanism, but we can use other ones you have in the data center. And this next talk's actually going to be about sharing the data center network. Yeah, and same. You know, and so far, we haven't focused on new isolation mechanism. We just wanted to use the existing ones.
Srikant Kandula, MSR.
Yep.
Could you comment a little bit on whether the gains from multiplexing are coming at the cost of predictability?
At the cost of predictability.
Do you see a lot of variance in your job completion times? Do you have a hard time, you know, ensuring half your nodes go to a certain workload?
Yeah, that's a good question. How this affects predictability. So this will actually depend a lot on your inter-framework scheduling policy. So for example, with fair sharing, you can ensure that each framework has, say, at least 25% of the cluster, so you can put an upper bound on how long it will take. Of course, it might finish faster, and that will increase the variance, but it might do it in a way that you like. So yeah, we have, I would say that we have the same characteristics there as other systems like the Hadoop fair scheduler or other cluster sharing systems.
I'm Arkady Konevsky, VMware. Had a question. You mentioned that multiple frameworks will run tasks on the same nodes.
Yep.
So the frameworks, as you mentioned, were all designed with the idea that they fully control
yes.
their all underlying hardware. So when you put them on sharing the node, how do you control security, or do you assume
yeah.
the virtual machine model?
Yeah, no, these are good questions. So how do you isolate frameworks on the same nodes? So we use OS isolation mechanisms. We've used Solaris projects and Linux containers to do this. Linux containers are a little bit like Solaris zones or projects. You can imagine using other mechanisms as well. These are just the ones we chose. So we rely on the OS to do this.
Hello, I'm Malte Schwarzkopf from Cambridge.
Yeah.
So you've compared static and dynamic partitioning in terms of sort of spatial division of the cluster. So you've divided it into four smaller clusters conceptually.
Yep.
Have you looked at all at time-based division of the cluster? So you give the whole cluster to each of the frameworks, and then obviously you would expect the completion time of jobs to be quicker because there's no interference between frameworks.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. We haven't done that, but it's It's not necessarily that the completion time will be quicker, because with something like fair sharing, if a new job comes in, it can start getting resources right away. If it had to wait for the next time slice, it might take a while, unless you're talking about very short time slices. But then you have the problem of, you know, if they use memory, for example, how do you swap them out that quickly? Yeah, okay. Did I understand that?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you again, Matej. Yeah.